Redbeard's Outfitter is a Mobile, Alabama-based outfitter offering a carefully curated selection of gear and apparel, outfitting you for your next adventure, exploring our world, and building community. We love this local store, and we love supporting folks like them who are building community in the outdoor space. Plus, they have some spectacular apparel for Alabamians and all the gear anyone would need to be ready to enjoy the outdoors. Use promo code TSO for a 20% discount online or visit them in store. Visit redbeardsoutfitter.com for more information. This is The Storied Outdoors, a podcast somewhere between Lewis and Tolkien and Lewis and Clark, finding clarity in the stories we tell and the adventures that shape us. Welcome to The Storied Outdoors. My name is Brad Hill, and I am joined, as always, by my good friend and co-host, Brian Gill. And we're joined today by Sam Bailey. He's the advertising director for Southern Culture on the Fly. He also sells explosives. We might get into that, or we may not get into that. But he's married. He has two children. He's an avid outdoorsman. I think that maybe, as I stalked your Instagram, avid outdoorsman doesn't quite seem like it is encompassing enough for all the things that I've seen you do on Instagram. But I know you're a fly fisherman. You love fly fishing. You work with Southern Culture on the Fly. You know, talks about fly fishing and tells stories. Man, you've caught all kinds of fish. You've been all over the place. You're a fellow creative, as you sell advertising for a very creative magazine. I've enjoyed seeing the things that you guys do. We're happy to have you join us today, Sam. So thanks for taking some time out of your schedule to partner with us.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I mean, you guys have done an awesome job with this podcast you're doing, and it's really an honor. Y'all have had some pretty big names on here, so I feel like I'm just a little guy in the sea. That Jimbo, whew, that's always tough to follow up. I wish you would have asked me to do this like last year before that.
No,
and also man. Haney's. I mean, yeah.
Well,
who wants to follow Matter, man?
I know it.
You know, I think about, you know, Brad and I are the same way. You know, we're just a couple of guys from Alabama, and we like to tell stories. And I think it's we always kind of go back to that untold story is kind of where we want to fall, and we want to tell those. And so, man, we're just so thankful that you're on this podcast with us. But we're talking just a little bit before we started recording, just kind of how you kind of landed where you are, and you know, kind of how you got into the outdoors. So you live in Georgia now. Had a little bit of time in Alabama, a little bit of time in Florida. You've kind of been all around the South. What was your introduction to the outdoors?
Well, I mean, my parents, my dad and my grandfather, they got me into it. I've got a picture of myself probably about 2 years old, a year and a half old, holding a bluegill in the middle of what it looks like, probably during deer season, honestly. But that's, you know, I do not remember a time in my life where hunting and fishing was not a part of it. I've got more pictures holding squirrels and shooting guns and with my family. So it's always been a part of it. It's something that's, I don't know. It's weird. It's just, I don't know what my life would be without it. It's hard to.
It's part of your DNA, huh?
It is. It's me.
You know what Wade Blevins says, that old bluegill is the gateway drug.
It is. There's no doubt about it.
Never gets old either, does it?
No, it's the same every time. I love them.
So much fun.
Gosh, I'll take give me a cane pole or a brim pole and some crickets, and I will sit for hours, man. That was kind of my introduction to that, and you know, a little chicken liver and catfish on a Zebco 30.
Yeah, it's funny you say the bluegill is. Last year I just threw a three weight in my truck. I travel quite a bit for my job, and I was going through, and I had a little free time in the afternoon. And I literally stopped on the side of the road at a creek I've never seen before, and I jumped out of the creek, and I headed into the woods, and just caught bluegill for like an hour on the side of the road for kind of a lunch break deal. And I was like, this is getting back to it. It's so awesome. So
that's amazing.
That's awesome.
So but, you, hey, just real quickly for real, like you guys sell, you're a salesman for not only Southern Culture on the Fly, but you sell explosives.
I do.
That's an unorthodox job title. Let's be real.
It is. Yes. So yeah, it's, I got into that.
We don't want to just gloss over that.
That's not one of those. That's not one of those things where somebody's like churching up your job. Like, you know how people do, you know, like, you know, I'm a drug dealer. No, you're not. You're a pharmacist.
But yeah, that's right.
made it sound darker than it really is. Like when you say you sell explosives, like what do you mean here?
Yeah. Well, so, explosives for the mining industry. So we do, you know, blasting in rock quarries, back in the day when I first started, we did coal mining, gold mines, but rock quarries are kind of the main thing now. And then construction blasting. A lot of my customers with this new company that I'm with are in the construction. They're blasting for roadways and, you know, big commercial buildings and things like that.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
That's
it's neat, but it's not unique. Queer. It's not quite as crazy as it sounds like it is.
Well, it's still unique, though. I mean,
it is.
That's pretty cool. That made me think about, for some reason, maybe this is totally off subject, but I think it was Brian Regan where he was talking about going on a road trip somewhere, and there was a sign on the road that said blasting zone, and he's like, shouldn't that read road closed?
Yeah. it's pretty safe. You know, they just want you to know.
Man, so, I mean, it's one thing to grow up in the outdoors, catching brim, shooting guns and stuff. It's another thing to get into fly fishing. For large portions of the South, fly fishing is still sort of still pretty niche, even though it's grown a lot. I think we would all agree that it's grown tremendously over the last few years. But for the most part, it's still pretty niche. How did you get into the fly fishing?
It first started with my grandfather when I was a kid. He loved to fly fish for bluegill and, on the bed. So in the summer times, we had a couple of old Eagle Claw, the yellow Eagle Claw fiberglass rods. Had a few of those, and we'd go in the John boat and go hit brim beds. And I always liked, the brim were awesome, obviously. And we were catching big old, big hand size, you know, shell crackers and bluegill in those ponds. But I always liked to throw it around the treetop and catch bass. So did that growing up. And then I didn't kind of got out of it, I'd say, around 10 or 11, 12, and picked it back up when I was 21. I just moved back from Colorado, and my plan was out there was to fly fish, and just things didn't work out for me what I was hoping they would. And moved back to the Southeast, lived in Florida for the summer, and came back to Birmingham and got my first fly rod. So my first fly rod. The other ones were my grandfather's, so it was my first fly rod.
You know, it's so funny. The first time I ever saw a fly rod was my granddad on my mom's side and my dad were fishing in Lake Eufaula, and they were fishing on the bottom, fishing some kind of a heavy sinker or something. I don't know what they were doing. And my granddad caught two fly rods from the bottom of Lake Eufaula. And he brought them up. They came home with no fish, but like a lantern and two fly rods. And like, I was like, what in the world is that? Like, I've never seen one of those things before.
So, that's amazing.
Like, how did they get in the bottom of you? Somebody had a bad day.
Somebody had a real bad day. That was a...
the rest of the boat was down there where those things were.
They did say something that one broke their line. So I'm guessing that was the boat.
Oh, man. I'm getting my seasons mixed up on me, Brian, but I think it was last season that we got to spend some time over at our good friend Craig Haney's.
Yes.
And we realized, I think you realized, there was a connection with Craig and with Sam.
Yeah. So that, you know, the first time Sam, we met Sam, I think was in,
in Atlanta
at the film tour. I think it was,
Fly fishing show
in Atlanta. Yeah. And we went by the Southern Culture on the Fly booth, and then, you know, kind of introduced ourselves and things like that. And then we're talking to Craig Haney in his man room down there in his basement, and he mentions you, and y'all had like this long friendship. And so we're like, mm-hmm. oh man, that's two times we've met, you know, come across Sam. Let's get him on the show. And so can you tell us a little bit about your how you and Craig kind of met and y'all's friendship from that point on?
Yeah. So, kind of goes back to when I moved back from Colorado. I'd actually gone in the deep South and bought a fly rod, from Rob and, David Diaz. And, I was in Homewood one day and I ran across this little fly shop, and it was Riverwoods Outfitters. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I'm going to go check it out. So I walked in and there was Craig Haney in there and Missy Robertson and came, you know, was hanging out all the time, just two great people, and just soaking up knowledge, hanging out every day after work, in between my lunch breaks, anytime I had. And so I was in there one day, and I'd been in there a month now, hanging out as much as possible. And I know
just a shop rat.
I mean, people, yeah, just a shop rat. Oh, yeah. Unpaid, you know, bothering Craig to death, I'm sure. I'm sure he was like, God, I wish I could get this kid out of here. So he probably thought that's exactly what he's thinking. He said, hey, Sam, I got some customers in here. They're trying to look at some fly rods. I'm busy. Can you go out with them?
Go make yourself useful.
Saying, yeah, he's going to put me to work, and I'm going to be like, no, I'm getting out of here. Well, so I go outside, you know, cast the rods with the people, and and come back in. They buy the rod. So nice. Next time I'm in there, Craig's like, hey, I've got to run out real quick. Can you watch the store for a minute? I'm like, yeah, sure. I'll glad to watch the store. So I watched the store for him. You know, that keeps going on for the next month or so. And then one day I get a call from Craig, and he's like, hey, Sam, can you, what do you got going on this weekend? I'm not doing anything this weekend. He's like, can you watch the shop for us? Can you work? And I'm like, yes, sir. So I go in, he's talking to me. He's like, all right, well, come in, you know, and we're going to go over some stuff. Okay. And he's like, Missy and I are going to ICAST. We need you to just run the shop for us for the weekend. I'm like, here we go. I got the keys to the castle.
You're jumping in the deep end there.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, you know, there I am working the shop, and it was awesome. I mean, I loved it. It taught me all about, you know, talking to people about fly fishing, you know, fly rods. Craig taught me so much. We would go fishing before work. He and I would meet up, and we'd go to the Locust Fork or the Mulberry Fork and catch bass and bluegill, you know, on the fly, and then head to work. It's just, he was kind of an adopted father like figure to me. I love him to death, and he's just a great man. So,
yeah, man, we love that guy.
Yeah,
he's not short on stories, man. I loved hearing every story he had. I mean, those guys are so rich, and you know, the more we can record those stories, the better this world will be.
Yeah, 100%. I love it. Yeah, I had the privilege of spending a week in Montana. His first time to ever fish Montana. This was back in 2014 or 13, excuse me. We had a good friend. It was a customer of the shop, Billy Ray, and Dr. Ray had retired. He was a dentist, and he had retired from his dentist practice and moved to Montana to Bozeman. Had an awesome little place out there. And I just happened to run into him one day on the river out of the blue. I saw him and I was like, Billy Ray? Sam Bailey, what are you doing out here? And I was living there at the time. So
it was random.
Yeah, it was just totally random. So we started talking and kept in touch and devised a plan to get Craig to Montana. He'd been sick, and so
Did he had cancer? He survived cancer, didn't he?
So yes, sir.
Wow.
It was around that time.
I think it was either the cancer. He also had some heart stuff going on, but yeah, it was either the heart stuff or the cancer. But he had been really sick, and he didn't think he was going to make it. And so he had gotten over it. We put it all together, got him to Montana, and like I said, I had the privilege of getting to row them down the river a couple of days. Awesome. We did a couple of wading days, did some float boats in a lake one day. It was just an awesome week to get to spend with those guys, and met another you know, another like come full circle, met a guy, Dr. Henry Dowling, who was one of Billy Ray's good friends from dental school, who was a dentist in Mississippi. And he and my father grew up together in Tuscaloosa and were best friends through high school. And I'd never met him. They lost contact after high school because in the 60s, there were no cell phones or Instagram or no. Facebook or anything.
No LinkedIn and, or, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So he was like, it was just kind of a small world, you know.
Wow.
And got to fish with him. So it was just an amazing trip. Amazing trip.
When we met Craig, Brad and I were in the Orvis store here, there in the Summit, and we started talking to Craig about our trip coming up to Hazel Creek, and it was, you know, Craig was telling us where to go. He told us where the campsites were. He told us what to take. He told us what time to hit the ferry. All these things. You know, unfortunately, that trip never happened. But you got a connection with Hazel Creek and Craig too, don't you?
Oh yes, yes. So working in the shop. Craig, I wasn't paid. I was the unpaid shop rat. Even after, you know, working while they went to ICAST and everything else, I was not paid. I had another job. So I was doing it because I loved it. And I was getting a discount on everything, which was like getting paid for me. So we're getting ready for a big trip to Hazel Creek, customer trip. Got a bunch of people going. And Craig comes to me. He's like, "Hey, Sam, I got something for you." Okay, cool. He pulls out a brand new St. Croix Legend Ultra 3-weight and a T-bore Spring Creek reel, 3-weight reel, line, backing, everything. I can't afford this. He's like, "No, this is for all the work you've been doing. I've been keeping up with all your hours. This is your pay."
Oh,
I'm like,
man.
"Wait a minute. No." He's like, "Yes, yes." So we went to Hazel Creek. I mean, I still have that rod today and reel, still use it all the time. It's awesome. But that's how Craig was. You know, Craig would, he knew at the time they just couldn't afford to pay me, and he was keeping up with everything. And he ended up giving me four different rod and reel setups. All of them were like top notch. I mean, two Orvis T3s with, you know, Bat and Kill Large Arbor reels, the St. Croix, and there's another one, anyways, I can't remember right now, but those were the three most meaningful ones because each one of them was for a big trip we had coming up. So,
that's awesome.
Man, in some ways, looking back, man, that may almost be better than, you know, having been just paid regular.
Oh, yeah. Eventually, I started getting paid.
You know, but you have these, like, those are treasures, you know, and, you know, those things too, that if you take good care of them and, you know, you got them.
That's it. Oh, I still have all of them. They're all in the basement right now. And I use most of them fairly regularly. So
that's incredible.
I'll never get rid of those.
Heck no. Tell us about, we've talked about Southern Culture on the Fly. Tell us about what is Southern Culture on the Fly and what is this thing you guys are trying to accomplish with it?
So, you know, The short answer is Southern Culture on the Fly is an online, free online magazine, but really it's a culture. It's a community that we are, you know, has been built and that we are continually trying to grow. You know, it's so much more than it's everything. It's you guys. It's everybody that is in this fly fishing, you know, community in the Southeast or is from the Southeast. You know, we've got people from all over the country and other countries that are reading it and buying our merch and everything else. So
that's awesome.
It's
very cool.
It's beautifully done. I mean, that the way it's laid out, the storytelling, everything about it is really, really a great look. I mean, the stories are compelling. I mean, now did you guys start that or did y'all acquire it?
Dave Grossman and Steve Steinberg are two guys from Asheville, North Carolina. Well, they live in Asheville, North Carolina. They're super creative and just amazing people. They started it in 2010 and grew it. This was their brainchild, their love child, and it was something that I was a fan of. Loved it. They would have, you know, obviously it's quarterly, so four issues a year. You're always looking forward to them. Great stories. It started off very raw, kind of you know, graffiti, punk rock, fly fishing magazine feel, with a very strong, you know, Southern base. And it's grown through the years. Amazing writers and photographers and artists have been in it and been a part of it. And so last year, John Agricola called me. I was like, "Hey, have you seen the new issue?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I saw it, but wow, what's up?" He's like, "Well, it's the penultimate issue." I'm like, "Yeah, I know. You know how Dave is." He's like, "Well, read into it a little further." I was like, "Okay." So I went back and read some stuff that I'd probably skipped over. Man, sounds like this might be it. So he's like, I think they're done with it. I'm like, "Okay, well, let's do some research. Let's make some phone calls." And come to find out, they were just kind of at a place in their lives where, you know, they were at the end of their creative journey with it, and they didn't really want to sell it. They didn't really want to turn it over to just anybody. And thankfully and fortunately, I had built a relationship with those guys years ago. And had kept in touch, you know, a little bit here and there. And thankfully, when we talked to them, they were very willing to listen to what we had to say and liked what we had to say about it and wanting to keep it alive, and allowed us to make a deal and purchase it, keep it going. So they're both – Dave's really been he's helped out with some things. You know, he was at the Fly Show with us last year. He's been writing some stories. He'll continue to help us with a story here and there, and hopefully some photography. Steve is most people don't know it, but he's a pretty famous artist. He does these giant, you know, art shows all over the world. And so he's pretty busy. He hasn't been able to do a whole lot photography wise for us yet, but we're hoping to get some more of his stuff in there. Cause he's such an amazing artist. Yeah. It's pretty neat, his photography and stuff, but the new look of the magazine has changed some. We think for the better. It's maybe a little more polished than it was before.
It's beautiful.
That's all Hank. He's a genius when it comes to putting that stuff together. He does such a great job.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can tell.
Hank's Bait Shop, Hanks?
Hank's Bait Shop, Hank.
Okay, yeah, make sure we're talking about the same
doctor, thing. Okay. Dr. Chocolate.
Dr. Hershey.
I think he said his father-in-law calls him that, or somebody calls him that. He said it the other day, and I was dying when he said it.
His father-in-law and I go way back.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, we wanted to get him on the show too. So
yeah,
but, and that's so cool.
Dr. Chocolate.
So in the magazine, just y'all, you know, we've got there's six of us.
I was going to ask you who the team is.
So the team is John Agricola. He is our managing member and editor. We have Dr. Michael Steinberg, who is a professor at the University of Alabama, who is also, he's our conservation editor. Dr. Hank Hershey is our creative and art director. So he puts it all together. Scott Stevenson, he is our merchandise and kind of a creative and merchandise director. And he also does some writing. And then Alan Broyhill is, you know, definitely last but not least. Alan was the first intern for SCOF back in 2010 or 2011. He started working with SCOF back then. He lives in Brevard, North Carolina, and Alan is just a super talented guy. He's a guide. He's a beautiful, brilliant photographer. He's one of my very close friends. And he is he's kind of our bridge from old SCOF to new SCOF, and he's a computer, you know, wizard, kind of like Hank too, and he knows a lot of the social media aspects and like I said, photography and videography. He's very good at all that stuff. He's also going to be our podcast guy because he is really good with putting the podcast together. So
when is that coming out?
We were supposed to start recording this week, but there's a little wrench thrown in it. So
well, let us know, because we want to push people to it.
Definitely will do. Yes, it's hopefully we'll have it, the first one coming out, we're hoping, in February.
Awesome.
We're going to kind of start it with the 50th issue. So
50th issue.
Yeah, the 50th issue of the magazine will be February, about the third week in February. So
So if you were going to sum up SCOF, like the purpose in like one phrase, what would you say?
Everything that matters.
Everything that matters. Okay.
It's one sentence, but yeah, that's it. That's everything that matters.
That's a pretty broad brush. I like that. That's cool.
You said something really interesting that I didn't think about asking until you said it, but you talked about, you know, the early parts of it being like punk rock, you know, edgy, a little edgy. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Some of the stuff, you know, obviously everybody's a little different. And that old style had kind of that skater, mag, maybe not as the photography was a little bit more raw back then. And you know, lots of the painting, you had like almost graffiti art, you know, stuff in the issues. And, it was awesome. I loved it. Something, and I still love it. You know, I still go back and look at those old issues. I think it's just the difference in the creative mind of Dave and Steve when they were putting something together, and the creative mind of Hank. And Hank's a little bit more polished look than ease of reading look than it was before.
I think this would be interesting to hear from you, Sam, about, because I think you'll get it. Something Brian and I have talked about, not so much on the like on the podcast, but we've talked about privately before, is something I've noticed. Like when we go to these shows, there are two distinct, very distinctly different groups of people at a fly shop or at a fly show, right? There is that punk rock group now, which feels pretty new, right? You know, we got some dreads, we got a bunch of tattoos. I pick on my buddy Peter down here at the Lost Angler over in Daphne. Like Peter is like, he's right next to a tattoo parlor and a CBD store. And he's a fly shop. I was like, this couldn't be more appropriate.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So you've got that group. And then there's like that sort of Orvis, you know, much more, you know, I don't know what the term would be. Let's say uppity or bougie group that, you know, they've got on their pressed button down shirts and their brush pants and their shirts tucked in. They may be a little scruffy, but for the most part, they're very businesslike and. Mm-hmm. And pretty posh. And so, and then there's, you know, there's people in the middle there. What is it about fly fishing that connects with those two vastly different demographics of people?
You know, I don't know what it is that makes each of them gravitate to it. I think it's something different. It's not your run of the mill thing, right? It's everybody. Anybody can go grab, you know, a spinning rod and do it. It takes time. It takes effort to learn to fly fish. Mm-hmm. So whether that's you want to be a little, you're on the edgy side of things, you know, you're that skater, that tattooed, that punk rock, dreads, whatever guy, right? And you want to do something a little bit different, a little bit different than the mainstream. So you do it. Or you know, maybe that businessman, he's like, I want something a little bit more challenging. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what brings different people to it. I don't even know what brought me to it, other than I just thought it was cool. And I was like, I want to try something different. Cause I'd bass fish, you know, my whole life.
And that's like Brian's story. I mean, Brian's sitting there with a man's bait shop hat on, growing up over there with the plastics and wasn't that like the bass fishing capital of the world over there?
Yeah. My best friend growing up, his dad was the VP at Mann's, you know, I mean, it was like nothing have Mann's and he had Southern Plastics and like between the two of them, it was, you know, 80-90% of all the lures made in the world came through Eufaula.
Yeah. I think I still got like six packs in the garage of the giant 10 inch jelly worms. Yes.
Hey, great. Man. Hey, you can use any color you want, right, Brian?
As long as it's purple.
Yeah,
I've just been fascinated by that though, Sam. You know, when you look around at those things, like, man, they are very, very different people.
It is
these shows and in these stores or whatever.
One thing I think is neat about fly fishing, and you find it in some other mini kind of niche things, but in fly fishing, you have those two groups, right? But at the same time, you'll have those two groups sitting down having a cup of coffee or a beer or whatever in the same boat and just enjoying each. It doesn't matter. You'll have a guy that is a billionaire businessman that will be in the same boat as a guy that's, you know, you're just dirtbag fisherman or
so pothead.
Yeah. Or you're, you know, a tattooed up tattoo artist. I mean, I've got a good friend that's a tattoo artist here in Atlanta and we fish together. And I mean, I'm nothing special. I'm a fish bum. I fall more in the fish bum category than anything, but yeah, I mean, it's great. You got people from all different walks of life that have found it. And when you're on the water, like, man, we're all the same.
It's an equalizer. That's for dang sure.
That's kind of how I live my life too. Like, I don't like flicks and like these, I don't know the word I'm looking for, but when people talk about like meeting different people and, you know, being in different groups, I don't care who you are. If you can talk to me and we can get along, we can find something to get along with. I promise. We're all the same. Yeah. Some make more money than others. Some like to do different things than others. But at the end of the day, we're all the same. We're all here doing the same thing. So
I'll tell you what, man, that's like you're talking about that employee of Scoff being the bridge. I feel like fly fishing in itself is a bridge, you know, to a lot of people, a lot of, you know, and I don't know, just getting a little philosophical here for a second. I wish we could think about the things that are more alike than that divide us, you know,
right.
In a lot of ways, you know, sometimes there's a lot of strife in the world and, you know, we can come to that common ground. A lot of times there'll be a lot less junk going on.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with that. I mean, I think that's the thing. That's what was really behind that question is I've noticed is like there are very different, you know, party lines, you know, in those groups. Like there couldn't be more different, but the one thing that seems to bring us together or, you know, is a love for this sport and a love for fly fishing. And I love it. That's one of the things that I've discovered that I really love about the sport is how much it unifies people. When people find out you do it, they're like, oh man, really? How'd you learn how to do that? Mm-hmm. I never, you know, I didn't know anything about it, you know, and I didn't either. You know, I'm one of those cliche guys that saw a river runs through it and thought that is beautiful. How do I do that, Robert Redford?
I want to learn how to shadow cast.
Yeah, look, I would look like one of them girls in the marching band with a flag. You know, just waving that thing all around with a hook in my ear.
Done that.
Yeah, right. bringing it back to the Southern culture on the fly and this publication, what are, for you guys, what are the ingredients of a story for what you guys are looking for when it comes to your publication?
I mean, looking for is, you know, something, it's got to be interesting, obviously. We want either the story to be Southern based, right? Or can be anywhere else based coming from a Southern perspective. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. You know, we've had some guys write some stories about out West. They're guys that are from the South. We've, you know, had some people that are from, you know, all over or New York, whatever, write some stuff about fishing in the South. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what it is. Want something good. But it's got to be part of that Southern culture. We think it's special. You know, I've lived, like you said, I've kind of lived all over. I lived in Colorado and Wyoming, and then I've lived all around the South. And there's something special about the South. There's no doubt about it. There's no place like it.
Yeah, I certainly would agree with that.
So, you know, a lot of your, you know, the nature of storytelling is reflective in its, you know, some of a lot of the stories that are kind of in Scoff are reflective in nature. You just mentioned that you've been all over the South. You've been all over, lived in some of the biggest fly fishing parts of the country, you know, Wyoming, Montana, Colorado. When you're on the water, I think it's hard not to reflect. Are there any turning points in your life where, you know, at the outdoors and reflection kind of collided to kind of make you drawn to something like Scoff?
That's a good question. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. No, but, I don't know. That's a good question, though. I have to think about that one a little bit more.
Sure. Yeah.
I should have sent that one to you beforehand.
Yeah. My bad. I dropped the ball on that one.
My brain doesn't work that way. Where's the easy questions?
Oh man! Well, we did have our favorite easy one. Is always we're sitting around a campfire. We often will call this podcast a digital campfire, and there's nothing like sitting around a fire and sharing stories. If you find yourself around a fire, what is your go-to story? It can be funny, it can be serious. Like we said, or in the pre-show conversation, we always love a good bear story. So, you know, if you got bear stories, we're always game for that.
Always up for a bear story.
Definitely doesn't have to be a bear story at all.
The bear story. So one of my bear stories we like to tell is, my friend Scott, who's in the magazine with me, Scott and I have been friends for years. One part I didn't touch on is when I stopped working at Riverwoods, I actually opened up my own fly shop in North Alabama.
What?
And it was in Huntsville.
Okay.
Yes. It was called Bailey Outfitters, and it was in Madison, actually, not Huntsville, but nobody at the time really knew Madison. So it was, you know, Huntsville based, but in Madison. And that's where Scott and I met. I had the fly shop, and he was up there living and working and started coming in there, and we became buddies, and he'd stay and help. And we went on a trip. There was a guy, Steve Carter. He was a guide up there. He had Black Lab Outfitters, and he guided over here in Georgia, North Georgia. So one day he and Scott and I, we loaded up and we're going to go over here to fish. And we're going to fish Noontootler Creek. I'm not sure if y'all have ever fished it. It's a small little creek in North Georgia mountains around Blue Ridge.
Yep.
Really neat little place. But we're up there and we park. Steve takes off, goes up the road. Scott and I are like, well, we're just going to hang out fish together. So we take off and walk down the road a little bit, hit a trail, hit the creek. And we're wading up the creek, and it's tight, and the fishing's been tough. We're catching some fish, but not a lot. We're having a good time. Kept getting this real weird whiff, and I'm telling them.
A little musky.
Has something that day. I don't know. And it gets stronger, and then it'd go away. And then it gets stronger. And that's a bear. Like, that ain't no bear. It's a bear. He's like, I think it's a bear. And then, I don't know, maybe it is, maybe it's not. We can repo, and there's a cave. It's coming from this cave. And I'm like, dude, we need to get out of here. He's like, yeah, we need to get out of here. So we cross the river, walk back down, come out. We walk back up on top of the hill. And we're walking up there. We're telling Steve. He's like, there ain't no bears. And I said, we get in the truck. We start heading. Here comes a mama. Right across the road with two cubs right in front of us, right where the cave was.
Well, you just missed that one.
Oh, my gosh. I was like, oh, yeah, there's no bears.
Yeah, so, no bears.
No bears.
Hey, that's
that's my only bear story.
That's a distinct smell, though, like for real.
I know. Man, it was.
We smelled it while we were there, Brad.
I was just thinking that, Brian. That first time with Chase when we discovered it, that was that weekend that we discovered it.
Yep.
Because that's... Sam, that's where we went back and filmed.
Oh, was it? Okay.
That's where the YouTube film was filmed at.
I thought some of that looked familiar.
Yeah.
Oh, what a beautiful place, man.
There's so many beautiful creeks like that all over up there between North Georgia and North Carolina. It's pretty neat.
But yeah, that first time that we went to the Noontootler with Chase and, who I was with us, was Hugh up there with us that time when we were supposed to fish, but man, it had rained and rained and it had blown the Tekoa out. We were supposed to fish with these guides and we ended up on this lake bass fishing and it was terrible.
Ben was with us on that one.
Ben was with us. We didn't catch a bass. We didn't catch any. It was terrible. Anyway, but we discovered the redeeming thing was we discovered the Noontootler and it was gorgeous. I mean, what a beautiful, beautiful place.
It is. It's amazing up there. There's a lot of them, though, like I said. Actually, Nootula's terrible. Do not go there. There's a lot of better creeks everywhere else. So.
Yeah, it's so tight. It's little. The fish are tiny. Yeah.
You're going to lose all your flies.
There are bears. There's bears.
Yes, the bears.
Don't go there.
So,
it's real hard to find.
As a father, have you gotten your children into outdoors? Are they where are they in this spectrum? I know that you're at a 10 as an outdoorsman. Where are they on the spectrum there?
They're pretty low on it. They're interested.
Yeah.
It's funny because it comes and goes, right? So my daughter, when she was little, we lived in Wyoming, and she was in like kindergarten, pre-K, kindergarten, first grade in Wyoming. And so she would go out with me, and she would sit in the blind antelope hunting, or we would go fishing a lot, and you know, she would get out and fish with me and always had fun. And I was like, man, I'm going to have a little fisherwoman. And then we moved back to the Southeast, and she just kind of lost interest in it. And it was maybe partly my fault. You know, I'm in it, and I'm kind of full bore in it. So my trips are not always kid friendly trips.
Yeah.
So, but I always would try to take them. And then they would be like, hey dad, I want to go fishing. I'm like, all right, cool. I've got this trip this weekend. Let's go next weekend. And then they're like, no, I want to go on your trip with you. I'm like, you can't go on this trip with me. This is a trip with a bunch of guys, and we're going, you know, camping for 4 days. This is not a kid's trip. Hmm. Next weekend we'll go. Next weekend comes along. No, I don't want to go. Mm-hmm. So I dealt with that, and I've never really found a great way to manage that. Now, my son, he is 14 now, and he is full into sports. He plays football, he wrestles, he plays tennis, and he plays baseball. He's busy with sports and has played sports his whole life. So he's gone with me quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But he finds his love in sports right now, mm-hmm. and he enjoys it. We were actually supposed to do a trip this weekend. We always, for the last 3 years, we've done a guy's trip on Martin Luther King weekend to the mountains, and got a cabin with a couple other dads and their kids. And it didn't work out this year, but he always looks forward to that trip. And we always have a lot of fun, catch some big old pellet trout, private water trout, and it's fun, and they love it, and it's awesome. It gets them fired up. But it's funny because he'll get into, he really likes to bass fish.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one summer, COVID was amazing for him because the sports had been shut down, everything else. Mm-hmm. He would jump on his bicycle. And Brian, earlier I was telling you about, you know, how our neighborhood and this little area, Cartersville, Georgia, is so great. You almost feel like you're knocked back, you know, 20 years, but he would jump on his bicycle. He'd grab his two rods and his backpack tackle box and ride out of our neighborhood, through the park, into his buddy's neighborhood, and they'd fish all day.
Oh, man.
Is there a better life?
That's a good childhood right there.
Yeah, it is. And they did that all. So I was like, you know, as bad as COVID was, it was like, man, it kind of jumped them back in time. It was great.
That's cool.
He still likes it, and he's getting – He goes through his phases where he's like, hey, I'm ready. Let's go fishing. And then only fly fishing he really wants to do is for trout, though. He hadn't figured out bluegill and bass yet, or saltwater. He wants to use a spinning rod for everything else.
What's the one thing? All right, this is going to be another one of those hard ones, so brace yourself. What's the one thing you want your children to say about you when they're older?
Oh, wow.
And I'm not going to let you get off the hook about all you're going to tell me later.
No, you're going to make I'm an emotional person too.
Hey, I'm right there with you. Give me a good Hallmark movie or something.
I hope they know that I love them, mm-hmm. and I hope they'll say that I was obviously that I was a very loving, and that I was fun, and that is a tough one. You know what? That I was a good person and a great dad. That's what I hope they say about me.
Wow. I hope mine say that about me too. thank you for answering that one.
Yes, sir. What 14-year-old son. I mean, I haven't gotten there yet. My son's 10. My daughter's 14. Yeah, you know, in a world that has questions about like manhood, what is a man? And there's all kinds of, you know, there's huge debate there. What are a couple of qualities that you're like, you kind of see your son starting to become a man? What are a couple of things that you're working on? You're like, this is what I want my son to be or know what a man is.
So this is actually funny that you asked this, because we're doing some work around the house, changing out some fixtures, updating. We got a little construction going on that I told you guys about. And this isn't, you know, just a man, but it's doing man things, right? We're changing out a bunch of hardware on our doors, putting new doorknobs and everything else on. He's asking to help me. So I'm like, yeah, sure. Come on, let's go. And we're, you know, he's using a screwdriver. We're doing this. My wife and I, we go out to eat dinner with some friends. He calls me. He's like, hey Dad, is this right? And I look, and he's redone three doors all himself.
Oh, wow.
So yes, like,
let's go.
That's part of it's like, hey, look, you're doing it right now. Right?
Take initiative. That's it.
Man, that's it. Golly, you can't teach that.
I know. So that's big. And yeah, that's one of the big ones. That's but also awesome. Like, you know, like I just said, is like, I think, you know, manhood, you know, it is about being a man, being able to take care of yourself, take care of your family, you know, kind of be a protector. But you know, I think manhood also is being a good person, treating people with respect, you know, no matter their background or who they are or, you know, what's going on. I think that's a big part about being a man. So I hope like he's that. I think he is. I feel like he is. And I hope he's seeing that from me. So
I love that.
Man. Well done.
Be respectful and take initiative. Well, if we had more men that did that, we'd be in good shape, wouldn't we?
That's right.
Thinking of others, putting others before yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And that was something that we loved so much. We were talking earlier, you know, you were talking about Metter, Jimbo Metter. And that was, you know, something that was big and very important to him was like treating others, you know, better than yourself. And
yeah.
And it was so encouraging how many people, you know, would reach out to us and say, man, that's not lip service. Like that really is who he, you know, that's how he treated them. And so, man, that was so encouraging. So gosh, thanks for sharing that, man.
I wish I had gotten to know him better. I got to meet him a few times when I worked with Craig, and always was just, cool to be around. And that was 23 years ago. But he was really neat to be around. And then all the stories that I heard, you know, about him from Craig and some other people around me, and just such a cool guy. And I think I told you this. I think I wrote you a little note. But you stole my thunder when y'all got him on y'all's podcast, because that was on my list. I have this list I've been writing out through the years of people to interview that have never been on a podcast, and he was at the top.
Hey, there's still more stories for him to tell.
Oh yeah,
holy
macro. I was just joking. I was so thrilled and tickled that y'all got him, and it was just man, it made my day. I've listened to it like three times.
So. Oh man, that's awesome.
And the second time we talked with him was as good as the first, you know, because he shared different.
I haven't listened to the second one. Have y'all put that out yet?
Yeah, so
episode. I've been on a podcast hiatus here in the last month. I've not listened to any podcast.
There's a gem waiting for you, Son.
Okay, good.
Episode 100. Gosh, it was. He told some really funny stories.
Yeah, they were all new. Oh my gosh,
new stuff. There were some new things. That's
funny.
Well, I'm going to be on the road quite a while tomorrow if this weather holds out, and so I'll have to give it a listen.
It's worth it. We were laughing out loud. I mean, you know.
He was more, I felt like he'd gotten more comfortable with us, and he was real relaxed, and he shared some good ones. It was
awesome.
I still laugh about him. Yeah.
I want to step back real quick because y'all are asking me about my kids and fishing. Another cool thing is my daughter, who is 17, and I said she'd never really got interested in it since us, you know, taking over for Scoff. She's all of a sudden kind of gotten a little interested in it.
This is kind of cool, Dad.
Yeah, exactly. And then she met Mary Beth at the fly show last year and Robin. And she was like, oh, they're super cool. So
there's none cooler than that pair right there.
Wait a minute.
No.
this might be cool, you know? So she asked me, so I took her fishing. It was a horrible day of fishing. I mean, and she didn't have a lot of time, but it was after school on a Wednesday or Thursday. Anyways, we went to the river and we had gotten a bunch of rain. The river was just blown out muddy, but we still went and fished and had fun for about 2 hours. And then I took her to a small creek that shall remain nameless in North Georgia. And we went up there and waited for a day and caught some trout together. So, and she's ready for the next trip. So she is getting more interested now. And I won't say it's really Scoff, but Scoff introduced us to some of these women in fly fishing that are so awesome. And so that's been a blessing too.
Yeah. I love that the movement of getting more women on the water. I just think it's good for the sport. I think it's good for everything. What Robin's doing, what Mary Beth's doing, Sarah, all those ladies are just doing some fantastic work, and
they really are.
Can't say enough about them.
Yeah, they are. They're doing some really cool stuff. So hopefully we'll see some more stories about some of the stuff they're doing this coming year, maybe.
I loved the dorsal films, the triple tail thing that they did. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I've got to watch it. I've saw some of the little, snippets of it. I was down there when they were shooting it though, so that was cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
I hope to get to do that next year.
Yeah, it's a very fun event. They put on a really good thing down there, so.
I got to learn how to catch them first, but I got a skiff, baby.
I mean, you don't have to catch them. Just have fun. Y'all think fishing's about catching fish?
No, we don't.
Oh, that's awesome.
If I ever start judging my trips on how many fish I caught, I'm probably not going to be fishing very much.
No.
I've learned that I've duck hunted for the first time this year. Duck hunting's real similar down here in the South. We're not talking Arkansas duck hunting. We're talking Mobile Delta duck hunting. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if you judge it by how many you bring home, you'd be struggling.
That's right.
Oh, man. All right, Sam, you spend a lot of time fly fishing for years now. You got five. You can have five flies in your box. What are your favorite five flies?
Five flies in my box for all fishing, no matter where.
This is what you need.
Okay, from five flies, you got to have a Clouser minnow because you can catch fish on Clouser minnow pretty much anywhere you go, right? Absolutely. Saltwater, freshwater, trout, bass, everything. So this is one that I don't know if y'all have probably ever been told, but an articulated Goldie. It's basically a double woolly booger, but it's white with gold chenille and a cone head, and it's articulated, so it's two of them.
Oh man!
And I've literally caught, I think 25. I think I counted 25 different species of fish all over the country and in Alaska with it. Fresh salt, everything. Yeah, so it's just a bait fish pattern. It's super simple, but it's
a lot of action awesome. Because of that, because it's double,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's awesome. Okay. All right, boogle bug, and any color as long as it's chartreuse. Actually, if I really had to pick one color, it's gonna be the olive green. But yeah, chartreuse is definitely a solid one. let's see, man.
Got two left, man.
Two left. This is tough. Two left. What do I fish with the most? So going trout, I've got to have a parachute Adams, right? Because
it's a parachute Adams.
Yeah, you can catch trout on it anywhere, right? And then my last one, because I want to go out west and catch trout, is going to be a chubby Chernobyl.
Oh, that's what I like to hear.
There we go. Oh, that's a great list. Great list, man.
That's going to be hard to top.
It is tough to top. That's a good list.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Great,
because I can tie a Clouser minnow in so many different variations to catch redfish, trout. You can catch, tie big one for tarpon.
That's good. That's so good. What about favorite species to catch?
You're gonna laugh at me. Bass. Spotted bass, largemouth bass.
All good. All good.
Smallmouth probably are my favorite all around, but I don't have them real close to me. But
seeing a big bass smash something on top I mean, there's just very little like it. I mean,
what's that thing Jimbo says? Where that papa was.
Where that papa was.
That papa was. it's all, I mean, look, it's all about going back to your roots, right? Yeah. It's the simple thing. I can do it in my backyard and I can do it all day and have a blast. And it's also the one thing that most people in fly fishing haven't done.
Mm, you're right.
Which is kind of wild, right?
That's right.
True. Yeah, that's true.
Everybody goes trout or saltwater, you know, they don't go for bass and they're just.
And that's cool. Anywhere, you know, nearly anywhere in the country, right? I mean,
yeah, it is. And river bass are the, you know, for me, are the most special.
So. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. There's awesome. Good, man. Well, what's your next adventure, man? What's next on the horizon for you, Sam?
I'd like to be telling you about this trip I'm supposed to be leaving for Wednesday to the Chandelier Islands, but it just got canceled. So the weather is not our friend.
No.
You know, 30 mile per hour winds, they don't like, you know, don't necessarily like that coming straight out of the north on a houseboat in the middle of the islands down in Mississippi and Louisiana.
You for real?
So. I don't know. Seems like fun to me, but yeah. So that was supposed to happen. We were supposed to leave Wednesday for that, but we got the fly fishing show coming up in February, and we'll have a booth there. Come see us. Love for you guys to come hang out for a little bit if y'all are coming over this year.
We hadn't said we were going to or not, but we should though.
Probably should. Yeah, it's gonna be a big show.
And tell that weekend again.
It's the first weekend of February. I think it's the first, second, third, or second, third, fourth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. So it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 3 days again. You know, Friday night they'll have the fly fishing film tour. Well, excuse me, what is it? The International Fly Fishing Film Fest or whatever. It's the IF4. They'll have that Friday night. So get your tickets. It's always a fun show. Ben at the fly fishing show does a great job of putting these things together. Gets tons of great vendors or, you know, companies to come out and show their product off for all the people. It's just a fun time. It's like a giant gathering of our weird community. So
it was a lot of fun last year. I mean, we had a blast.
We did have a great time.
It's a great time. So that's coming up. I'm trying to think. I've got, I don't have any big trips other than that one planned right now. We've got the Sheepy. Is down in Louisiana. I'm fishing it with my good friend Jason Shepherd, who's a guide down in Panama City. We're going over to fish it together in March. I think it's like the second weekend of March.
Mm.
So that'll be a big one. That's a lot of fun. And then
you're going to catch sheep's head with a guy named Shepherd.
That's right.
Well played, right? Well played, sir.
Wow.
So. Yeah, go ahead and place your bets early.
I think you're I'll bet on you guys.
That's awesome. Well, man, this has been a fun conversation. Sam, where can people find Southern Culture on the Fly?
So we're southernculturalonthefly.com. We're on Instagram at Southern Culture on the Fly. I think there's a Facebook. Yeah. We don't do much in the Twitter world or any of that stuff, but southernculturalonthefly.com. It's free to subscribe. Little shameless plug.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
And how can people support your work though? I mean, it's free to subscribe and it's something that's online, but how can people support your work?
So we have right now, I think our merch store is down because we've got a couple shows coming up and we're trying to get everything ready for that.
Makes sense.
But we do sell t-shirts, hats, stickers, yeah, give us a like on Instagram. Support us that way. Fantastic. Share it and tell your friends about us. And we want to keep it free. You know, it's free for the people, supported by advertisers.
That's great.
If there's people who are listening who are have a product or something that they would like to advertise, is there something we could put in our show notes that they could contact you?
Yeah, definitely. They can shoot me an email at SouthernCultureOnTheFly. Sam at SouthernCultureOnFly.com. Nice.
Okay. Nice. Yeah. We'll put that in the show notes. Long.
Yeah.
But yeah, we definitely appreciate that. And yeah, if you're out there, support the people that support us and tell them that, that we sent you.
Nice. Yeah. Well, Sam, that's great. Appreciate you taking time with us. And I hope our paths cross again soon. And, Brad's going to close us out here.
Oh man, again, you know, just thanks for carving out some time to share your story and share some stories, man. And we're thankful for guys like you and you know, a publication like that that does do what we love to do, and that's write stories down, share those stories, and inspire them. I mean, they're beautiful stories. They're captured beautifully in photography, which is something Brian and I are real passionate about. And so it really is a joy to check out every time, you know, an issue comes out. I enjoy seeing it, and it's both pleasing to the eye, and it's also a challenging read and very well written. I've always been real impressed with the writing within Southern Culture on the Fly. And I know that comes from a wide range of people, but man, it's really well put together. And so kudos to you guys for a great product. And sharing those stories with us. And we hope today's conversations inspires, you know, somebody to write their story, to share their adventures in the place that we love to call the Storied Outdoors.
Redbeard's Outfitter is a Mobile, Alabama-based outfitter offering a carefully curated selection of gear and apparel, outfitting you for your next adventure, exploring our world, and building community. We love this local store, and we love supporting folks like them who are building community in the outdoor space. Plus, they have some spectacular apparel for Alabamians and all the gear anyone would need to be ready to enjoy the outdoors. Use promo code TSO for a 20% discount online or visit them in store. Visit redbeardsoutfitter.com for more information.